I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. For the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this, offering as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Bodhi Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratnamandala Puja Mega Samudra Saparana Samaya. Welcome, Sankhya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent, Chapter 11. The text makes a little bit of a shift at this point. Up to now, we've been reading and hearing and studying what we need to do to get on the path and practice the path to enlightenment, the Mahayana path. But from this point on in the text, we get to find out about all the benefits, all the good things that happen if we actually do this path, all the goodies. There is some detail, because there are a lot of benefits. And the way this is explained, it's explained in a couple of different ways. One way is what's called the five paths, and we'll be talking about that tonight and what they are and what that entails. And then an alternative way to explain it is the 10 bhumis or the 10 grounds. And there is a relationship between these two, although they don't exactly line up completely, but we'll talk about that too. We'll start with the five paths, and the definition of a path is actually very simple. It means an approach to liberation. That's what the word path means. Someone might ask the question, well, why do we need to even study this? Like, what's the point? We're not there anyway, so. Apa Rinpoche anticipates that question, and he says, one might ask whether it's absolutely necessary to teach the five paths and the 10 bodhisattva bhumis at this time, since we do not yet have the ability to understand them directly. The answer is that we must know about them as a prerequisite for developing spiritually and making progress on the path to enlightenment. It's a bit like preparing to travel to another country. Before we set off on our trip, we first prepare ourselves by trying to learn something about the place, the climate, the customs, and so forth. It's sort of like reading one of those travel guides before you go to an exotic place you've never been to before, because you want to know what the food is like and the climate and the, you know, currency and customs and all that. You don't want to wait till you get there to try to figure all that out. That's an explanation of sorts about why we're studying this even though we're not there yet. The five paths begin with the path of accumulation. The path of accumulation, according to Apa Rinpoche, on this stage, one's mind becomes habituated for the first time to meditating generically on non-conceptual wisdom. So generically means conceptual. When we did the ninth chapter, we talked about wisdom, and there were various meditations that were given, and there was explanations of the philosophical side of it. That's sort of the introduction to emptiness or wisdom on the Mahayana path. In other words, we use words to describe it, to try to approximate what it's about, and to begin to learn how to meditate to get towards an understanding or an accomplishment of it. It's not the direct realization of emptiness yet, but we have to start somewhere. And so the path of accumulation is where we start. And we start by becoming habituated for the first time to this whole topic, which is vast and deep and not that easy. But this is the beginning of that process. The path of accumulation is subdivided into three subdivisions: small, medium, and great. When a person starts to practice the path of accumulation, they are practicing the what are called the four foundations of mindfulness. You may have heard of this. So the mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of the mind, and mindfulness of phenomena. You might even recognize this as what we would call part of the foundation path, although the foundation path description of the paths is different than the Mahayana description of the path. So we're just doing the Mahayana description of the paths. Otherwise it gets too complicated and it gets really hard to understand. So that is essentially what the practice is on the path of accumulation in the small level. The medium level is what are called the practice of the meditative cultivation of the four perfect abandonments, sometimes called the four perfect endeavors. And endeavor is used to indicate that this is going to take some exertion to accomplish. The four endeavors are abandoning the negative states that we have already generated, preventing the negative states that have not yet arisen within us, enhancing the virtues that have already been generated, and fourth, generating virtues which have not yet arisen. So it's kind of a, we kind of need to do some introspection to see, well, what are our negativities and what are our virtuous states and what do we lack and so forth. How do we prevent the negative states that we don't have and how to accumulate the positive states that we haven't, you know, developed yet. Ape Rinpoche says about this, "It is said that whoever has taken the vows of enlightenment thought out of great compassion and engages in the practices has entered the path of accumulation. There are many practices we must perform once we enter this path, and there are numerous qualities which must be possessed by the person practicing this path. And these may be subsumed into to the following five principal categories. The first one is maintaining proper morality. The second one is restraining the senses. The third one is knowing how to limit one's intake of food. And fourth, being industrious in the sitting practices by abstaining from sleeping at dawn and in the early part of the night. And five, joyfully abiding in introspection, being aware of what should and should not be done." So that's the list of the five, and now we're going to hear a little more detail about what this actually entails. So the first one, maintaining proper morality, is simply to hold the vows that you have taken. So whether you're a lay person or a monastic or whatever you are, there's all kinds of different vows that can be taken. And so the first level of proper morality is maintaining those vows, whatever they may be. The second one, which is restraining the senses, this means using wisdom to understand that whatever we perceive through our senses, such as forms through our eyes and sounds through our ears, are really empty by nature. With regard to method, it means that we always purify our actions and transform them into the quality of enlightenment. For example, as explained earlier, when we walk down the street, we can purify this activity by the thought, as I walk down this street, may all sentient beings enter the path of enlightenment. And when we close the door, may all sentient beings close the door to the lower realms. Thus, we can purify the objects encountered by our senses. Now, if you remember back when we talked about the perfections, we talked about perfection of joyous effort. This was what was referred to as purifying the spheres of activity, and there were pages and pages, literally, of suggestions like this in the text about how we can adapt our daily routine of activities, just normal neutral activities, and flip them into positive activities with these aspirations that we say as we do the walking, sitting, eating, or whatever it is that we do. And the examples were given with the idea just to show you how it's done, and then you or we would adapt these examples to our own personal life and lifestyle depending on what kind of day we have. So it's to teach us how to do it so that we can, because most of our activities are neutral. And from a precious human rebirth point of view, in a way, that's wasted time. This shows us how we can convert that into meritorious activity. So that's what restraining the senses refers to here. The third one, knowing how to limit one's intake of food, means not taking food and drink with excessive, desirous attachment, and also limiting our intake. In other words, we must have the correct perception of why we are eating. We must bear in mind we're eating to sustain the body in order to carry out the practices, and to feed the various types of beings living inside of it, and so on. And in such ways we can develop the appropriate attitude towards food and lessen our attachment to it. The fourth one, being industrious in the sitting practices, says, instead of sleeping excessively, we should devote part of our waking hours, such as early evening or early morning, to meditation. We should meditate with a very stable mind on the impurities of the human body, the four strongly placed mindfulnesses, mindfulness of body, feeling, mind, and phenomena, or the various practices of the enlightenment thought. So that's the fourth one. The fifth one is joyfully abiding in introspection, being aware of what should and should not be done. A person on this path should possess not only mindfulness, but also awareness or introspection. At the very time when he engages in any action, they should be aware whether the deed is concordant with morality or not, and whether it will accrue favorable or unfavorable results. They should apply this introspection during the performance of the deed and carry it out with this proper understanding. Those are the five qualities a person must possess when practicing the path. And then we have the great path of accumulation. Ape Rinpoche says, it is said that when one reaches the stage of the great path of accumulation, one attains certain miraculous or supernatural powers. One may travel to the various Buddha realms to receive teachings directly from Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. The main practices on the path of accumulation are to listen to the doctrine, study it, contemplate the contents of the teachings while upholding one's morality. That is the great path of accumulation. So now we go to the second path, which is called the path of application. It's also referred to as the path of joining. And one might ask, well, what are we joining? So it refers to the joining of the path of application's result, which leads to the path of seeing. Now you might say, well, what does that mean? That will become clearer when we understand what the path of seeing is about, because there's a big jump when we get to the path of seeing, and this path, the second path, leads up to that. So that's why it's sometimes referred to as a path of joining. It connects the results of the two paths, is what it refers to. Sakyapandita says that the definition of this path of application is an approach to liberation in which non-conceptualizing gnosis is meditatively cultivated through conceptual thought, and in which the path of accumulation has already been accomplished. So what does that mean? So it's an approach to liberation, okay, in which non-conceptualizing gnosis is meditatively cultivated. So what that means is we're, gnosis refers to wisdom, okay. So this discussion about emptiness and wisdom, we're still in the conceptualization of it, but we are way more advanced in it than we were in the first path of accumulation, okay? So it's a step above and beyond that, although we haven't completely gone into direct perception of emptiness yet. But we're definitely getting towards it, getting in that direction, and so it's separated out as a separate path. And again, there's small, medium, and great. Abhi Rinpoche says, path of joining or application is a higher gateway or path to liberation in which non-conceptualizing wisdom is cultivated through generic characteristics, that is, conceptual thought. So when they say generic characteristics here, what they mean is conceptual thought, based on what was previously achieved on the path of accumulation. At this stage, one has not yet attained the actual realization of emptiness or selflessness, but there is a clearer mental vision of it, just as we can know about a certain place before we have been there. In other words, although one does not yet have the actual direct realization of emptiness or selflessness, one can meditate about it and work on the meaning. There are three subpaths in this path, the small, intermediate, and great, and these divisions are similar to those in the path of accumulation. So, when there is no definite time as to when one will attain the path of seeing, which is the next path, this is known as the small path of joining. On the intermediate path of joining, there is a definite time frame for attaining the path of seeing. And when one is on the great path of joining, one will attain the path of seeing within this current lifetime. Now, that's one subdivision of this path. There's another way of subdividing it, and that is the subdivision according to the manner in which reality is realized. And these four are heat, peak, patient acceptance, and the most excellent mundane dharma. So we'll go through these now. So the first one is heat. And again, I'm quoting Apirimshe. During the stage of heat, one continues to meditate with a clearer vision of emptiness. One still possesses only the generic realization of emptiness, which will not develop into actual non-conceptual realization until the path of seeing. Heat occurs as a sign heralding the arising of non-conceptual insight wisdom, just as the heat generated by rubbing two sticks together heralds the ignition of fire. This requires a little bit of explanation because it's not heat like I feel my body heat. I feel warmth or anything. It's not referring to that at all. It has nothing to do with tummo or any of these yogic practices that generate heat. It's more like the example that Rinpoche gives, which is if you rub two sticks together, they get warm first, and then you get the fire part. So the warmth is a sign that what you're doing is going to produce the result that you want. That's why they call it heat, but it's not heat like, oh, you know, I feel warm. It's not a warm fuzzy or bliss or anything like that. It's more of a sign. Or they use the word heralding here. It's more of a mental brightness is what it is. It's like, oh, I'm actually starting to get close to realizing emptiness, and now I'm getting excited about it because I can see it coming. I can realize it is coming because my mental clarity is so much greater than it was. It's a different category from the accumulation path. So it's separated it out. Okay? So that's what heat refers to as a subdivision or a way of analyzing or breaking down this path. The second one is called peak. Rinpoche continues, when the meditation on emptiness develops further, though one still does not have direct realization, the clear vision of the generic realization of selflessness is progressively intensified. In other words, the mind is being steadied in this meditation. It's called peak because this is the last stage at which one's wholesome deeds remain shaky. From this time onwards, one's wholesome deeds become stabilized. The Abhidharma Kosha explains this as the peak from which the root of one's virtuous deeds will never be cut by erroneous views. In other words, by disbelief in the law of karma and result. The peak is called a peak because it doesn't last very long. You just sort of get there and then you're moving on. So it's a stage, but it's not a place that you remain long. It only lasts a short time. And then the third category is what's called patient acceptance. And Rinpoche says, when one further intensifies the level of meditation on the generic meaning of emptiness and selflessness, one reaches the stage of patient acceptance. On this stage, the practitioner is no longer alarmed by emptiness, and develops patience regarding the meditation itself. Now, that's all Rinpoche says about this, but I believe what he's referring to is that, and I've heard this in other teachings, that when a person gets to this point in their practice and they really start confronting the realization of emptiness, sometimes there arises that sort of fear or even terror that, oh, I don't exist. I don't have an ego. I don't have a self. And it's kind of disconcerting, and there's this, there can be a feeling of fear that arises, like you're sort of losing yourself, which, of course, was never there in the first place, but now you realize that. And so this stage is patient acceptance of that. It's like, okay, I've integrated that part now, you know. And then the fourth category is called Most Excellent Mundane Dharma. And Rinpoche says, when one overcomes all forms of fear through this meditation on emptiness, in other words, when one overcomes the manifested conceptualizations which obstruct one from attaining the realization of emptiness, one reaches the fourth stage known as the Most Excellent Mundane Dharma. However, one's realization of emptiness is still not completely accomplished. Although one has perfected all the different types of worldly dharmas, one has not yet attained the transcendental wisdom realizing emptiness. This is called the Most Excellent Mundane Dharma because it is the highest factor obtainable by worldly people. It acts as the predominant condition for attaining the undefiled path of seeing. This Most Excellent Mundane Dharma, it really refers to calm abiding, the attainment of calm abiding. So it is possible to attain calm abiding without being a spiritual person, because it really refers to your ability to focus completely. But that doesn't make you a spiritual person. Your motivation is the main thing that makes you a spiritual person. So it is theoretically possible for a worldly person to get to this point. And that's why it's called what it is, a worldly attainment. So that concludes that path of application. Now we go to the path of seeing, which is a completely another, it's a big jump from where we started. And the path of seeing is equivalent to the first bhumi, or bhumi, it could be translated as ground or level, but it's so commonly referred to as a bhumi in all the texts. So I'm just going to say bhumi, but it means a ground or a level. This chart is slightly misleading because there wasn't room. If I had a PowerPoint, I would slide all of this up so that the first bhumi would be equivalent to the third path. Okay, so that's what this funny arrow refers to. All of these bhumis have names. This is called Supremely Joyful. So the path of seeing, according to Apa Rinpoche, is the union of meditative absorption and transcendental wisdom, which sees the nature of the Four Noble Truths directly. So, in other words, it's the union of calm abiding and special insight. When we get special insight, we're now spiritual practitioners. Before, we could be worldly practitioners and have calm abiding, but now that we have the union of those two, calm abiding and special insight, it's a spiritual path now. So this is the direct realization, the direct perception of emptiness or wisdom. And Apa Rinpoche says, in order to accomplish the path of seeing, we must relinquish the proximate or secondary defilements and the root defilements. There are more or less 20 proximate defilements, such as stinginess, dishonesty, envy, etc. But since they are all based on the six root defilements, they will automatically be eliminated when the root defilements are overcome. The six root defilements are desirous attachment, anger, pride, ignorance, doubt, and erroneous defiled view. The general defining characteristic of defilement is that which disturbs the mind stream, preventing it from abiding in peace and calm. There are two broad categories of defilements, imputed defilements and innate defilements. Wrong views, which cannot be logically established, are included in the category of imputed defilements. All ordinary beings possess innate defilements. These include desirous attachment to loved ones, hatred towards enemies, and so on. According to the Mahayana, bodhisattvas abandon all the obscurations of defilements on the path of seeing. Rinpoche continues saying, according to the Mahayana teachings, the Mahayana path of seeing is the meditational state of the first bhumi. The things to be abandoned on this path are classified into the obscuration of defilements and the obscuration of phenomena. And both of these obscurations need to be totally eliminated in order for one to gain full and perfect enlightenment. It is said that the realization arising in meditation on the Mahayana path of seeing eliminates all the obscuration of defilements completely. With regard to the obscuration of phenomena, this can be divided into two categories: obscurations to be abandoned on the path of seeing, and the obscurations to be abandoned on the path of meditation. The first of these are uprooted along with the obscuration of defilements in the meditation on the Mahayana path of seeing. We start the job on the path of seeing, and we finish it on the path of meditation. Bodhisattvas on the path of seeing realize the selflessness of the person, the selflessness of the outer object phenomena, and also the selflessness of the perceiver. In other words, the realization of selflessness or emptiness is complete. There is a correspondence between the path of seeing and the first bhumi, but we're not going to shift to the bhumis now because we haven't finished the five paths. So we're going to finish the five paths, and then we're going to go through the bhumis and talk about them. They are just different ways of breaking it down into categories that we can understand. And as we'll see, the path of meditation includes the second up to the tenth bhumi. So the path of seeing is the first bhumi, the path of meditation is the second to the tenth. So that, in a nutshell, is the path of seeing. Now we go to the path of meditation, the fourth path. Sakyapandita defines this as making yourself adept in the approach to liberation through special meditative absorption. The path of meditation is sometimes called the path of cultivation. Also, you might see that written or hear that. In regard to Sakyapandita's definition, Abhay Rinpoche says, in other words, one makes meditative absorption a habitual pattern so that it becomes part of one's being. Normally, we sit down on a cushion and we meditate and we think that's meditation, and then we get up from the cushion and we don't think that all the rest of it is meditation, although it could be, but we don't necessarily treat it that way. We don't actually necessarily meditate in the rest of our life, and that changes here. At this point, it's all meditation. The path of meditation has a couple of subdivisions. The mundane path of meditation is shamatha, or calm abiding, but without special insight. And if you'll remember back in the previous lessons, We talked about how this is the main cause of being reborn in the form and formless realms, which is where we don't want to go. So we're at a high level of meditation, but if we mess up and we don't do it correctly, we can end up on an off-ramp that we don't want to take. The reason is there's no special insight. The other classification is the supramundane path of meditation, which is habituating the mind in the realization of ultimate reality, and to stabilize the realization of emptiness of the path of seeing, both during and post meditation. So we take the path of seeing, we stabilize it so it's not only during meditation, but it also is in post meditation. The path of meditation, if you remember, discards the rest of the obscuration of phenomena, and the obscuration of defilement was already uprooted in the path of seeing. So we finish that homework. That, in simple terms, is passive meditation. Now we come to the path of no more learning. It's also known as the complete accomplishment. Alpe Rinpoche says, the path of no more learning of the Mahayana, also known as complete and perfect Buddhahood, is the final destination of the Mahayana practitioner. So this is where we've been headed the whole time, complete enlightenment. Sakyapandita defines it as the meditative cultivation that reaches the end of the approach to the sphere of reality. What happens is, at the very last moment, right before enlightenment, the practitioner realizes directly the inseparability of reality and wisdom. So it's the realization of the true nature of reality, which we've been talking about forever. It's like a synonym for enlightenment. That's what enlightenment is, okay? One of the interesting characteristics is it can only be accomplished in a human body. We've talked about precious human rebirth, and it's this great opportunity and all the great aspects of it. But this is another one. This is actually, in a way, the most important one. You cannot attain enlightenment without a human body. It has to do with Vajrayana and the diamond path and the secret teachings about the energies and so forth in the body and how those are used as a path. And that's what makes Vajrayana so special. All the other paths, this is according to Mahayana point of view again, all the other paths, the Shravakayana, the Pratyekabuddha Yana, the Sutra Yana, all of those other paths eventually lead to here, and when you get to the height of those paths, you need to take a human rebirth to finish it. That's why we never really know who's walking down the street. It could be a very, very high spiritual being who's here for their last life before enlightenment. In some paths, that's what's called a once returner. One more time, human rebirth, and then the final accomplishment. So that's interesting characteristics here to know, and also to reinforce your feeling of preciousness of your precious human rebirth. Because if you're sitting in this room here, you have the precious human rebirth. It's not just being a human being. There's 18, remember the 18 boxes that have to be ticked or checked before you qualify and get the precious human rebirth certificate. It's just another reason to be really conscious and awareness of what a great opportunity this is, and not to be wasted by doing too many worldly things. Okay. His Holiness the 42nd Sakyatrizin makes a comment in his commentary where he says, the path of no more learning only arises on the basis of a human body. It is the ultimate state, the ultimate path of liberation. It is beyond samsara and nirvana. It completes both the elimination of what is to be eliminated and the accumulation of wisdom. In other words, at this stage we obtain the non-ceasing result of ultimate wisdom, compassion, power, and happiness, as well as the ultimate activities that will benefit sentient beings, leading them from samsara to liberation and Buddhahood. In other words, we have eliminated all of our defilements, we have accumulated all of our merit, the accumulation of merit and wisdom. Having done all that, we've finished the path, we've become fully enlightened Buddhas, and then and only then can we really and truly help sentient beings. We can sort of help sentient beings along the way, doing the best we can, but we're not perfect. We don't have clairvoyance. We can't see what they really need. Sometimes we mess it up and make it worse. But when we get to the final, complete, perfect enlightenment, Buddha has all kinds of powers, including clairvoyance. We're going to talk about those later. And Buddhas don't make those mistakes that we make, trying to help and not really helping, because they know exactly what that person needs. And they not only know that, but they have the ability to give them what they need, to give them the Dharma teaching or the wisdom, whatever it is that they need. That's what His Holiness is saying here is really the summary of the whole path. That's what you get when you arrive at enlightenment. So that, those are the five paths. So any questions about that discussion? Clear? Okay. We listened. I asked if there were any questions. That's contemplation. So now let's just do a short meditation just to do the third step and to integrate all this and gain some more merit. Find a posture that you feel comfortable meditating for a few minutes. This will be short. And tonight's meditation object is the five paths. We'll say the dedication in English. By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of earth, old age, sickness and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious, may it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen, may it decline where it has arisen, and may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samanta Bhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise is supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future. I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have attained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.
Thank you.